If we were in Israel now, the Hasidic Jews, we would be approaching what are called the High Holy Days, or the Days of Awe. And it's the three feasts that occur at this within a few days of each, within 21 days of each other. And it's the feast of Rosh Hashanah, the feast of Yom Kippur, and the feast of Sukkoth, or Tabernacles. We've spent most of our time thus far in the history of the foundation concentrating on the meaning of the Feast of Passover. We've spent very little time concentrating on the meaning of these three feasts. But this time, we are going to concentrate on the meaning, primarily, of the Feast of Rosh Hashanah. For your quick, I know all of you know this, but I'll do it to some may have forgotten. We have found a mystery in our study of the Talmud and ancient writings that hasn't been celebrated in the church. The last time we know it was celebrated was A.D. 165. That's over 1,800 years ago, by a bishop called Chrysostom. He's the last one in recorded Christian history to study what I'm going to talk about tonight. And that is the meaning of the ancient feasts. In the book of Leviticus, in the 23rd chapter, there are seven feasts mentioned which are to be celebrated forever in all your generations. And then there's one other feast that was later on that's mentioned that Christ celebrated it. And those feasts are as follows, and their meaning. The Feast of Hanukkah, which is celebrated in December by the Jews, on the eighth day of the Feast of Hanukkah, the Holy Spirit moved upon Mary, and Jesus Christ was conceived in the womb of Mary. 9 months later, on the Feast of Rosh Hashanah, which means the head or the beginning of the year or the time period, Christ was born in the earth. He was born on the earth. He became visible on the earth. Ten days later, in terms of what we celebrate, but 30 years later, in terms of linear time, Christ was baptized. And that's when John the Baptist said, "Behold, the Lamb or the goat of God that taketh away the sin of the world." On the Feast of Tabernacles, it's when he changed the water into wine and put forth, therefore, in that mystery or that miracle, the meaning of life. On the Feast of Passover, he was crucified. On the Feast of Unleavened Bread, he was buried. On the Feast of First Fruits, he rose from the dead. And on the Feast of Pentecost, the empowerment, or his seed, was shed on all flesh. Now, if you don't count the Feast of Hanukkah, which is hidden, there are seven feasts of the Lord that are to be celebrated in perpetuity. Well, I'm going to tell you a mystery tonight. Those seven feasts are the seven seals on the Ark of the Covenant in the book of Revelation. And as one by one those seven seals are removed from the Ark, that which is within the Ark will be unleashed on humanity. We have understood, therefore opened, one of the seals thus far, the meaning of Passover. It's time that we begin the process of opening the other six seals. And this time we're going to open one more seal on the Feast of Rosh Hashanah. And that feast, we will celebrate it the 23rd of this month. And from now until, really until the middle or end of October, all that you will do will be to celebrate these three feasts that are upcoming, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Tabernacles. Intently study that we might know the mystery and therefore open three more seals. In Galatians 4, Paul was talking to the Galatians and he says, "My little children, of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you." Now we as a people and you as individuals have understood in the past that the birth of Christ was celebrated by us on the feast of Rosh Hashanah. It was transformed to be celebrated in December, much, much later in time, so that Christians could adopt a pagan holiday that was originated in Babylon that celebrated the resurrection of Tammuz. But we aren't, you know, I'm not going to play games about, well, you can't have a Christmas tree, but the idea of Jesus Christ's birth in the world had to take place on the Feast of Rosh Hashanah. The reason is, in ancient times, Rosh Hashanah, in the original time, the world was created on the Feast of Rosh Hashanah, and millions of other things happened, but for us, the new world was created on the Feast of Rosh Hashanah, the new heaven and the new earth. But in you, up till this point, no matter how long you've been here, for you, you've been pregnant with Jesus Christ. You somehow knew that there was something else going on in you. You knew somehow in a mystery that Jesus Christ was somehow, maybe, hopefully someday, might be in you. And so you've been dispensationalist. You say, okay, when this and this happens, then I'll be happy, and then Christ will be formed in me. For this year, the meaning of Rosh Hashanah for you will be that Christ is birthed into the world in you as a vessel. And that means that from this point forward, from the understanding of the celebration of that birth, there can be no other life within your vessel and no other activity except that which is Christ. There can be no more attempt to get it right. There can be no more attempt to do it this way or that way. There can only be Jesus Christ. That for each of you, starting the 23rd of this month, you will celebrate the birth, i.e. that which is within being manifest physically in you and on you as of for all purposes. That means there's not any more two of you, there's only one of you. There's no more duality in your thinking. There's no more any attempt to try to get it right. There's no more an attempt to try to figure it out. There's only an attempt to live. And with Paul, say, for me to live is Christ. That means that everything else up to that point in your life has only been the afterbirth, and that's its only value. Do you understand that? In 1 John 4:17, it says, "As he is in this world, so are we." That means that there is no more an act of trying to be something. There's no more an effort to try to get it right. There's no more an effort to try to protect yourself from some evil person named Oli. There's no more justification for being in a state of fear. There's no more justification for being in any other position other than for me to live as Christ. Period. The essential activity on the Feast of Rosh Hashanah, in terms of the temple activity, was the blowing of the ram's horn. It was sounded, it was only on that day. Every other day when the ram's horn was used for any purpose, It was a silver mouthpiece that was in the horn of a ram, and it was blown to remind Israel of the sacrifice of Isaac. On the feast of Rosh Hashanah, a new thing occurred. For one time in the year, the mouthpiece was changed to solid gold, and it was blown all day. That means that on the exact moment that Christ was birthed into the world, in the temple, the priests were blowing the ram's horn to try to remind God of his promises made to Isaac. But they didn't see the reality that occurred 12 miles from where they were blowing that horn. That the promise of God, the purpose of time and space, everything that every feast and every thing in the law, every breath that they had taken up to that point, pointed towards, was taking place, and they were blind. They didn't see it. They didn't know it experientially, just as most of you, all of you, have not known it experientially. You've only known that maybe someday, if you're good, if you don't screw up, if you don't fuck this up, if you don't do that, if you don't do this, if you get this right, then maybe someday, well, if I stop thinking this way, if I start thinking that way, if I get my shoes on right, if I don't do this, if I don't do that, then someday I might know something about maybe if, maybe Jesus Christ might mean some little tiny little thing to me. The meaning of this feast on the 23rd of this month is that now Jesus Christ in you is manifested openly to the world. That means everything is finished in terms of Powell or Tom or Wade or Terry or Susan or anyone else. That you are left with the afterbirth, and there's only He that's remaining within you. You understand? Now, you'll mess up all the time, just as He did. There's still some of you that can't possibly conceive of a Messiah or a Savior who crapped in his pants and wet his pants and had to have his diaper changed, who screamed and yelled trying to get his own way periodically, but who never, ever, ever, ever could leave being the child of the Father. From this moment forward, from the Feast of Rosh Hashanah, recognized and totally apprehended within your mind, there can never be a time from this moment forward when you won't be, no matter how blasphemous this may sound to you, Christ in your form. And just as it took Jesus Christ years and years and years as he studied and searched the scriptures, as he went to the feasts, and one day on his 30th birthday, he woke up when he was celebrating the feast of Rosh Hashanah and was reading the readings, he said, "My God in heaven, they testify only of me." And so with you. When you search the scriptures, when you read these things, you will find out they testify only of you in the Christ form. But you never again, because you've picked up the cross in its totality, that the old you is gone. There can never be an old you. It's gone, because Christ is now birthed to the world. Now the rabbis say that the reason that ram's horn was sounded on the Feast of Rosh Hashanah was to confuse Satan. And as long as Satan was in a state of confusion, he could do no harm to Israel. And the Psalms and the Bible finally defines what happiness is. You know what happiness is, according to the Bible? You've all got your own definitions of it. You're convinced of happiness would occur if this and that took place in your life. even though this and that has already taken place in your life, and it never brought you happiness before, but you're still dumb enough to continue to believe that if it happened next time, you'll get happy. You know what the Bible defines happiness as? It says, happy are the people that hear and know the sound of the trumpet. That means that when you hear in the Spirit the sound of that trumpet in you, knowing that it's announcing with that golden mouthpiece that now Christ has come into the world in you, and there, that whatever that thing looked like in the past, it's gone with the afterbirth. Some of you, you know, Judy is what, 4 or 5 days late in her birth from what the doctors projected? Some of you are about 18 years late. You've been pregnant for 18 years and you've been morning sick constantly. God, it's hard to be pregnant when you've been pregnant for 12 years. Well, by God in heaven, I pray that not one of you here will come to birth on the 23rd and be stillborn. You will be stillborn if you know not the sound of the trumpet. Because you will continue on for an eternity trying to get it right, with an accusing heart. And that's what hell is. The essential meaning of the sound of the trumpet is the end of all religion. And the beginning of spontaneity. The beginning of openly commending yourself. If you're hungry, you'll scream and yell. If you're thirsty, if you want to be breastfed, whatever the issue is, you'll just say it. And you will forget the idea that it is even possible to have an accusing mind. Oh, I can't say that because I shouldn't say that. Oh, I can't say that because this will happen if I say that. Oh, you understand me? Aren't you tired of protecting your ass? It's not done you one bit of good thus far. You've tried to act like Christ and it hasn't worked. Now let him be birthed in you by its own volition and be free. Knowing that whatsoever takes place from this moment forward can never be anything other than Christ. And you can say, well, Christ wouldn't do that. Yes, he would. Well, he was sinless. No, he wasn't. Not in the way you understand it. By the Jewish law, you could not sin until you knew the law. The law said that you could not know the law until you had reached the age of the law, which was only the rabbi that determined it at that time. Christ happened to reach the age of the law at his 13th birthday. Therefore, up anything he did from the time of zero until he was 13, by definition of the law, meant he was sinless. He did everything. He beat up kids, I promise you. If you believe some of the ancient writings, he did all kinds of evil things. He did, I mean, there's a lot of writings that were allegedly from that period of time that so freaked out the people that they were never included as canon. Talking about him beating up people and stuff. But you understand, sin is a definition of a term. It isn't what you think and feel bad about. It says in here, when you reach that period, then the blood of Christ has cleansed and purged your conscience from any idea of a dead work. That there is a new phenomena taking place, and there is an exchange of identities. This is the meaning of the cross, not some stupid attempt that man and your understanding have put for some behavior pattern that you can't meet. Just for you to be explosively you. I said the other night that for the first time in my life, I've watched MTV. And the one thing that I noticed and was conscious of was the energy that was in their performances, and in reality, the abandonment that was in their performance. They should be our allies. Not these idiots that are running around with a label of Jesus Christ trying to put on double-knit suits to fit their double-knit personalities, but people who explode without regard for consciousness of self. And that's what the world is waiting for. A body of people that would explode with life, not death. He came. He birthed into the world. He lived a life. He died and was resurrected for one reason. Not so you could get it right, but so that you would have life. Aren't you tired of death? Genesis says that if you eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, that in dying you will surely die. Aren't you sick and tired of surely dying? Don't call me Shirley. If I, as an individual, I mean, I've not done anything right. But I promise you, if I, as an individual, had sat around and tried to decide on the right thing to say when we were meeting, when I was talking to you, we would have had no hope. If you sit around and think about the right thing to say and structure the thoughts, then you're denying the efficacy of the Father. You're putting the ability to accomplish something back on that which is cursed. Now all you have to do is explode. Well, I'll get in trouble. So what? Happy are the people that know the sound of the trumpet. Well, for us, that trumpet is going to blow on the 23rd. And it's going to birth, and it's going to blow in the temple. And it's going to announce and proclaim that birth of the promised one of all nations in you and on you. So that which has been hidden in pregnancy will be made visible to the world. That which has been protected in self-seeking will become explosive in abandonment. That which has spent a lifetime justifying itself in the flesh will now abandon that effort and be justified only in the spirit. That which has spent a lifetime walking carefully and tiptoeing through the rules and laws now will joyfully walk without self-awareness. Is that possible? Yes. My little children, of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you. the redemption of the time. It talks about redeeming the time all over the scriptures. There are then 10 days between the feast of Rosh Hashanah and the feast of Yom Kippur. That means, in the Spirit, that in those that 10-day period, Christ was birthed into the world, grew to manhood, and 10 days later is baptized. That's what redeeming the time means. It means to see that total event take place in that 10-day period. You understand? Now, those of you who may not have heard any of this before, the reasons you're in small groups is so that you can understand it and it can become meat to you. Here's what's read. Two benedictions as the shofar is blowing. One says, "Blessed be thou, O Lord, our God, King of the universe, who has separated us by thy word and now has instructed us to hear with understanding the call of the shofar." And then it says, "Blessed be thou, O Lord, our God, King of the universe, who has kept us and sustained us and privileged us to finally reach this time." That's what's said when that ram's horn is blowing. In that time, the rabbi says the following. He says, "Awake from your slumbers, you who have fallen asleep in life. Reflect on your deeds. Remember your Creator. Be not as those who miss reality in pursuit of shadows and waste their years in seeking after those things that are vain. Forsake your ways and your thoughts." How do you forsake your ways and your thoughts? You do it simply by recognizing they're not yours. It's an act of understanding, not an act of mental gymnastics. In Bananas, we're studying the latent power of the soul. Well, we're supposed to be studying it. We've been trying to study it for a long time. But the latent power of the soul are the things that you try to do automatically. When you sit around and you try to think about stuff, and all your efforts to try to think about stuff and get your words right before you speak it, all your efforts to not to try to do this or do that, all your efforts, what's happened to them? The reason you like to walk in darkness is because, you know, who would have believed it? It says, John says, that a great light has come on the world, but they came not to the light because they liked the darkness more than they liked the light. Now, why in the hell would anyone like darkness? You know why? Because you get to compare. It's not totally dark. It's sort of like lukewarm dark. A lot of you know about lukewarm other things. This is lukewarm dark. It means that you get to compare yourself with someone else. It means that you can say, "Well, I'm not as bad as that person is." Now, you'd never be that dumb. Oh, yes, you do it. You do it constantly. Every time you judge somebody for anything, you're saying, "I'm glad I'm not as bad as that person is." So you love the darkness because you get to compare in the darkness. You even love your boredom. Nobody loves to be bored. Oh, yes, you do. Because in your boredom, you create your own false reality. You escape to the significant other, the place and time in your mind to create your imagined reality instead of exploding where you are. I want us to, with understanding, open each of the seven seals. We've opened one, I believe, in their understanding of Passover as a body. Now we're moving towards opening two, if we can understand with clarity the Feast of Rosh Hashanah. 10 days later, I pray that with clarity we'll be able to open another one, the third seal. with the understanding of the Feast of Yom Kippur. And 7 days later, I hope we open another one with the understanding of the Feast of Tabernacles or Booths. The last thing the rabbi reads on the Feast of Rosh Hashanah is the following one. Remember the song we sing, the one song, when the earth quakes and the what is it? When the earth, what is it?
Millstone
breaks and the earth quakes, some will feel fear and some elation. Well, that song in John's mind came from what I'm going to read right now. On the last thing that's read on the Feast of Rosh Hashanah, it says, "Now, O Lord our God, King of the universe, impose thine awe upon all thy works and thy dread upon all that thou hast created, that all thy works may revere thee and all creation prostrate themselves before thee, that they all form a single band to do thy will with a perfect heart." Now, nobody in their right mind, unless they'd experienced and understood Rosh Hashanah, could ask the God of heavens to impose his awe and put his dread on every creature. Do you have any idea what that means? Have any of you been in an earthquake? Well, I because of what I did, I had to be in areas where a lot of them were. And we studied a lot of earthquakes. And some of you know this, but there's relatively large loss of life during earthquakes, even relatively minor ones. And the reason is, and this is never made public, but the reason is because the suicide rate during an earthquake, even a minor one, increases by over 500%. When the millstone breaks and the earth quakes, some will feel fear and some elation. The reason that suicide rate increases so dramatically is because there's a component within you that from your very birth of the old man has trusted that the earth is the solidified portion. It's the place that you can be sure is your foundation. It is the weirdest thing in the world when you're in a large earthquake. There is a total unsettlement to everything that you believe. Because the foundation thing that you believe shakes. Now, let me read one other thing that Paul said about that. He says, "See that you refuse not now him that speaketh. For if they escaped not, who refused him that spake on earth, much more shall not we escape if we turn away from him that speaketh from heaven, whose voice then shook the earth. But now he hath promised, saying, Yet once more I shake not the earth only, but also heaven. And this yet once more signifieth the removing of those things that are shaken, as those things that are made, that only those things which cannot be shaken may remain." I promise you something. The only thing that cannot be shaken, that's in within you as a being, and it won't fail any test, is the fact that everything in your life is finished at this instant. Every other thing that you can believe will be shaken. Now that's the prayer. The rabbi prays that everything in your life will be shaken to the extent that if, unless you have the mind of Christ, you'll commit suicide. Now, that's the job of someone who teaches or speaks in the name, and this is to cause everything within you to be shaken, except that which cannot be shaken. Understand? Impose thine awe on all creation. Now, it just so happens that there's now a really, for the first time in a long, long time, there's a high, high, high probability that I'm going to be back on the air hosting a talk show. That means that you all are going to have to be publicly identified with this ridiculous stuff. Impose thine awe on all creation. There's a lot of other things that took place that all reveal more of this mystery, but that's primarily what I wanted to tell you. That you can't run around being pregnant anymore. Pregnant doesn't do a goddamn bit of good from God's standpoint. The only thing that does any good is causing that which is the seed within you become manifest. God, some of you have been pregnant a long time. Darlene's been pregnant since she was 10 years old. With constant morning sickness. I won't pick on the rest of you. I just felt like picking on Darlene. Can you understand the freedom that could happen if you never again thought that the situation you were in was strange? That's what the meaning will be. To never think that you should be different than you are at any given moment. That's the meaning of the birth of Christ within you. To never again once try to justify yourself. Even to yourself. I mean, some of you have the most... some of you remind me of when I used to... Did I ever tell you about Mark Frick? Let me tell you about Mark Frick. Some of you may not have heard. His name is Mark Frick, F-R-I-C-K. And Mark Frick, I kid you not, started the Vietnam War. He was the captain on the gunboat in the Gulf of Tonkin that was shot at and then shot at the Vietnamese that caused the Gulf of Tonkin resolution that caused America's involvement in the war. Mark Frick and I grew up together. He was the same age as I am. He beat me up every day. I mean, we had a fight every day for about 3 years. I got beat up every day. What? What? But I'd go home, right? No. I put her in the dryer, yeah. No. I'd go home and I would devise the perfect plan that if I would only done this, then I'd have beat him up. And in my mind, I just knocked the crap out of him. So I'd go and try it the next day.
He didn't read the dream.
He didn't buy the dream.
So then you hired these Vietnamese.
But that's what some of you remind me of. It's when I was a little kid that got beat up all the time. Maybe because you go through these gyrations and something takes place, and so you go back into this significant other place in your mind and you recreate your own reality to conform to the imagery that you have of yourself. I promise you all of it's wrong.
The imagery or the reality?
Both. The only reality that can be possibly of any benefit to you, that can possibly bring you joy or happiness, is the visible birth of Christ in you. not just being pregnant anymore. And the only job of exhorting each other, whether you're husband or wife, boyfriend or girlfriend, whatever you are, and however close you are, the only job of exhorting you is not to tell you to be different. There's some of you that go to advice, I won't mention any names, but a lot of things get back to me, right? And so people go to different people for different kinds of advice. Like people go to Doug for advice about women.
I advise to stay away from them.
Or people go to Harry for advice on prophesying. So Harry tells him to analyze yourself and see whether or not you're
go within.
The only time you're ever supposed to go within is to see if Jesus Christ is there. Any other purpose of going within is really stupid. Well, analyze your motives.
Go to Pal for advice on money.
Yeah, right. That's another one. Or go to Harry for advice on money. What?
It's great to be back, Harry.
It's tough being Harry.
Somebody's got to do it. Doug can't do it all the time.
And who's talking?
Yeah, me neither.
But, I mean, don't you see? You spend your whole life on if-onlys in your mind. That's really dumb. Well, you can stop that now, because Christ is about to be birthed. You can do it for a few more days. You can have that morning sickness for just a few more days. You can think you're going to get it right for just a few more days. You can ask, well, what do we believe about this for just a few more days?
What's our position?
What's our position on this?
Always missionary.
And then there's some people that go to Rick for facts.
I can't go to Rick to find out what
how they go to Lee for emotional advice. Yeah, they go to Judy for birth control advice. They go to Powell for dieting advice.
I'm 27 pounds.
They go to Oli for niceness advice.
What?
Farm school.
My prayer is that each of you, your ears would be circumcised that you might hear the sound of the trumpet. Because I promise you, that's your only happiness. And there's no model for it. There's no role model for what the life that happens after the birth should look like. That's why Isaiah 53 said he has no form nor comeliness. There's no beauty that when we see him, we should desire him. There's nothing that the senses would be attracted to. But internally, there is happiness and joy beyond the ability to even speak it. Happy are the people that hear and know the sound of the trumpet. I pray, each of you, that you would hear with clarity that sound this Rosh Hashanah. Amen?
Amen.
Do we have anybody that can play music around?
Wait.